Welcome, FinTech Talkers, to another edition of the FinTech Talk Show, recorded live at Money 2020 in Las Vegas. I'm your host, Patty. My guest today is Bill Capuzzi, CEO of Apex FinTech Solution. He's also on the board member, at DTCC and a prolific investor. About Apex, with nearly $115 billion in assets under custody, it is a fintech powerhouse enabling digital account openings, managing custody, and clearing for thousands of retail investor accounts. The firm powers the backend of clients like eToro, Webull, SoFi, and most recently, Elon Musk's X, or Twitter, as we all know it, making Apex the fintech for fintechs. Welcome, Bill, to the FinTech Talk Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. So before we get into Apex and how you are being the fintech of fintechs, so I'd love to talk a little bit about yourself and what got you here. What did you do prior, and a little bit about yourself, Bill?
Yeah, sure. I guess let's start. You know, in college, I was an environmental science major. I had every sort of plan to become a doctor. The challenge was I had no money. And so I came out of college. I didn't want to have more debt because I took on a bunch of debt from undergrad. And so I took a job as an environmental scientist. And if there's any environmental scientists out there listening, it's not necessarily an incredibly lucrative job. and so I left sort of the path of becoming a doctor, environmental science, got my MBA and went to work for a company called DLJ. It was Donaldson, Lufkin, Jenrette.
The DLJ Piper.
Well, it was an investment bank, private investment bank, way back when. I'm showing my age now. and they owned a company called Pershing. And Pershing is sort of the oldest standing custodian clearing firm out there. And so I went to work for Pershing. I worked there for almost 10 years. Amazing experience, amazing people. Company still is part of the Bank of New York today. But it was sort of my first introduction to finance. It was my first introduction to fintech. And it was really my first introduction to understanding kind of what's broken in our industry. So as a young man in my 20s, again, I had that science background. I like to understand how things worked. I really dug into sort of the bowels of how investing works and realized, hey, there is definitely a better way. So from there, I started a company in New York as one of the founders called Convergex. Tried to acquire Apex from the parent company called Peak Six a number of years ago, was unsuccessful, but they convinced me to come across as CEO. So almost 10 years later, here I am.
Gotcha. That's interesting. And you've been in kind of focused in that wealth space and seen that evolve, and you're now part of that kind of journey, if you will. And I looked at your LinkedIn profile before this. And one of the things you say is, I come to work to change the world. Looks like you're doing that at Apex, especially in wealth tech.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, look, let's go back to the comment I made about wanting to be a doctor. I wanted to have a positive impact on this world, right? Mm-hmm. When it's all said and done and look back on my life, I wanted to actually make a difference. I didn't become that doctor, but there was an opportunity to disrupt and change the world of investing, right? Mm-hmm. So if you go back, let's go back, rewind 10 years ago, and you think about the world of investing for John Q. or Jane Q. Public, it was hard unless you had a lot of money, right? So there was commissions. Let's start there. Like, there's no longer commissions today. It's all gone. But you rewind 10 years ago, you know, if you had $100 to invest, almost 20% of that was going to go to pay for the trade.
Right.
Right. And as a young person, right, in my 20s, 30s, I couldn't afford to get an advisor, and I didn't have a lot of money. And so a big part for us was, and the purpose of Apex, we talk about purpose all the time at Apex, is to help every person on the planet invest in their future. And the way we do that, and we'll get into the details, is we're a B2B company. Mm-hmm. We're this platform that powers, like you said, the eToros, the SoFis, the Stashes, the Webulls, the Goldman Sachs Marcuses, all of the disruptors in our industry. And Apex sits behind those direct-to-consumer brands and brings to life this amazing kind of investing experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. And I do want to drill down into that. But before we leave the introduction kind of theme, I did see that you're a runner and a triathlete, and a few Ironman under your belt.
Yeah.
My son's a distance runner. He's just in high school, but he runs for varsity. And everyone has different reason why they run, especially in their adult lives. So I want to ask you about that. And maybe our audience might not know what an Ironman is. So what is an Ironman and why do you run?
So an Ironman is, it's a triathlon. You swim, you bike, and you run. In particular, the Ironman is 2.4 mile swim, followed by 112 mile bike, followed by 26.2 mile run. Mm-hmm. It's a challenging endeavor. I would say there's two main reasons. One is I love challenges, right? I love to challenge myself mentally. I love to challenge myself physically. And obviously every day I show up at work and there's lots of mental challenges. I like to have the same, sort of challenge on the physical side, and this is a pretty good challenge for me. The second is it gives me time to just think, right? Busy days, you know, I'm here at Money 2020. Yesterday I had 17 meetings all back-to-back. There's not a lot of time to think. And so I got up early this morning. I went out on the strip, and I ran. And it gave me time to sort of get my thoughts together from yesterday and think about what today was going to bring and, you know, think about my family and just get myself organized. And so I use that time to really kind of to do that sort of
kind of reset thinking. almost meditative in some ways. Yeah, that's very, very powerful. And thanks for sharing. And I have not done anything close to what you've done, but I have run a half marathon. And one of the things I found out, and my love for podcasts started at that, this was during the COVID time. So I listened to a lot of podcasts, and that was my meditative thing, just listening to different folks, because you get a lot of time, like you said, away from disruption. But let's talk about Apex. Bill, I think you touched on it already, and I want to get down to that, right? How the investment horizon or investment capability, the journey for a retail investor, especially mm-hmm. how that is changing. But before that, can you just introduce, because I don't know if every one of our listeners knows about Apex. So
sure.
What do you do? What products do you offer?
Sure. So you think of Apex as a platform, right? Sort of like a Twilio. A Shopify for investing of sorts. And there's sort of two sides to Apex, right? Sort of a two-sided coin of sorts. On the one side, it's software, right? We build software, and it starts with software to allow for our customers, right? So let's just take SoFi as a good example, to open accounts, right? Mm-hmm. It does, you know, the software to fund, to do all the trading, to do confirms, to do statements, to do cost basis and tax reporting and settling trades, effectively everything that is required in order for a direct-to-consumer brand to bring to life an investing solution. The second side of that coin is we apply capital and we act in what's referred to as a custodian. Those are the two sides of Apex. We can offer software where we don't actually are not party to the transaction, or we can step in as what's called a custodian, right? We're registered and regulated by the SEC and FINRA to actually custody the assets of that end customer. Mm-hmm. So we wake up today, like I said, we have over 250 different firms that use Apex. We have over 25 million end investors that are on our books. Mm-hmm. And we custody roughly almost $120 billion in assets today.
Wow. That's a big size. You're getting to Pershing in some way.
Yeah.
And who do you serve? So SoFi, obviously fintech, large fintech, maybe smaller fintech, robo-advisors. But do you also serve advisor and institutional clients?
Yeah. So I, the the vast majority of what we focus on is retail, mm-hmm. right? And retail can take a number of different forms. I think the one that's been sort of traditional for Apex has been just fintech, right? And fintech in the robo advisors, we spawn most of the relevant robo advisors are either partners of Apex or were partners of Apex. All of the online disruptors, right? So Robinhood started with Apex, Webull, SoFi, Stash, all the folks that are out there today. Then you have sort of embedded finance, which I think is this new category that's still emerging, which is you think e-commerce companies, right? PayPal, Cash App, you think Apple, folks that have a direct-to-consumer solution and want to add investing as a sleeve. Mm-hmm. And then the last part, again, still focused on retail, is sort of more traditional advisory. All right. And that business, for at least from a custodial standpoint, has been dominated by Pershing. We talked about them. Fidelity and Schwab. And the way that we're going to disrupt the advisory world is very similar to the way that we disrupted the fintech world, which mm-hmm. is use technology as the great equalizer, lower the barriers to entry, make the process a lot more efficient for those advisors.
Hmm. Oh, very, very cool. There's a lot to unpack there, Bill. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm intrigued by the embedded finance reference, yep. right? So I'm pretty close to that, and usually it's more around the lending space, yep. not seen so much. So you're seeing that flows now coming into play. So like the examples you took of Apple or other e-commerce players, they can kind of embed mm-hmm. into the flow, like either a savings or even an investment potentially.
Yeah.
That's intriguing.
I mean, that's new technology. That's mm-hmm. part of the reason it's not yet there is, Apex is sort of a one of one in what we do. The technology we built obviously has evolved over the years. It isn't until more recently that one of those brands could grab our SDK, grab our APIs, plug in, and actually launch an investing product pretty simply. The tricky part is for those brands is it is a regulated business. Mm-hmm. It's a hard business. It's not easy to do. And I think part of the challenge, the reason it hasn't taken hold yet is one is the market sold off, right? So retail investing hasn't been amazing in the last, let's call it 12, 18 months. And so you have a brand, I don't know, I'll pick on Walmart, that wanted to, they talked about doing an investing product. Launching an investing product into a market that's going down can hurt their brand,
right?
Because the experience for that retail investor wouldn't be great. The second part that's challenging for the e-commerce companies that embedded finance reference is, okay, it's a regulated business. It's hard to mm-hmm. do this. And many of those companies don't want to take on the regulatory burden. Apex has built a platform that allows us to, we can't take all of that burden, but we can take quite a bit of it. So I do expect as the market turns and retail equity investing starts to come back, markets ebb and flow, it will flow again. I think we'll start to see more of these opportunities for some of the brands that I mentioned to offer investing.
Yeah. No, the embedded finance does, I kind of see it as digital distribution, right? So distribution was the moat, if you go back in financial services, right? Even wealth, but just traditional banking. Everyone had branches every corner, right? Back in the 80s and 90s. And then they had the digital banking, but now they have embedded or whatever way you embed mm-hmm. or allow you your services to be embedded. So I think it does solve the distribution, especially on digital platform. And that's like when I talk to some incumbent wealth managers, they're always looking at how to increase AUM, how to attract
right.
the teens and stuff, and they're playing in these kind of modern software. So if there's an embedded product, it's very powerful. Yeah, it has to be the right timing, like you say. That's awesome. And in terms of the traditional, like the Pershings and Schwabs mm-hmm. and Fidelities, how is Apex different? And one more thing I'd like to say, right? Stripe is some Apex is kind of the Stripe of wealth tech.
Yeah.
That's a fair analogy, right? And more people know Stripe than Apex, but maybe this podcast and other things will change it.
Yeah, we're getting there. Yeah.
So, but how is Apex different? Is that kind of, are you more modern?
I mean, look, you make a great reference to Stripe, right, and how they disrupted payment space. Mm-hmm. It's the same for us, which is, how do you lower the barriers to entry, right? I say it all the time, which is you can't fake real time. You either can or you can't do things real time. And if you understand it, you know, go back to, I talked about my days at Pershing. You know, the investing infrastructure is built on old IBM mainframe, right? It is a batch-based world, right, for investing. Right? Most people probably don't know what that means, but when you do a trade today, it processes overnight. It's not a real-time transaction, right, at most of the big banks. And then tomorrow what you do is you wake up and the firm that you use has what's called a start-of-day file, right, that kind of is sort of representation, you know, represents everything that happened yesterday. Why? Why does it work that way? Right? Why do we, you know, it's 2023, we're the greatest nation on the planet.
Right.
And yet we still settle trades T plus two.
T plus two, yeah.
Right, cool. Okay, in a year we'll go to T plus one, but think about it, right? So if you went and bought, you know, let's say you bought 100 shares or $100, right, a fractional share of Tesla tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You have the money in your account. Why does it take a full day for that trade to settle? Right? And it's because the infrastructure in the industry is not real time. Mm-hmm. And so if you just use that, this is sort of the mantra for Apex, which is like, okay, if we're going to help every person on the planet invest, which is the sort of purpose of Apex, you have to eliminate all the friction, because the rich people out there, they have plenty of opportunities to invest. Right. And if we're really true to our purpose, what we're really focused on is the people that don't have those opportunities. Mm. Right. Which means, right, we need to be able to support somebody that has $100 in an account. Mm-hmm. We need to support somebody that's 22 years old. Right. I don't know if you have kids, but I have four kids. They live on their phones. Right. And they're used to a real time experience.
Right.
Why is investing any different? So we've had sort of this maniacal focus on eliminate all that friction. And like I said before, is you can't fake real time, right? A big differentiation between us and the others, the incumbents, is by and large, everything we do is real time.
Right, right. Yeah, the true democratization is what you're talking about. And that's very compelling, right? Everyone wants to do it, and sometimes less profitable, that segment, so people leave them out. But technology, using technology, you're helping those guys come in. Kind of stretching that, if I may, it's to get them in and let them invest that $100 is a great objective. How do you stretch that out for them or equivalent others who are now investing traditionally to have, say, a hedge fund manager's experience, right? That's the ultimate, right? The ultimate professional with a huge scale. They can invest in a lot of technology, a lot of information tools and access.
Yeah.
Eventually, I'm thinking that's where we're going, right? It's
for
so
sure.
Democratized. Yeah. So, yeah, your thoughts, and are you seeing that as a kind of a long-term vision for the industry?
Yeah, so think about, you know, what's alluring to, you know, to an investor investing in a hedge fund or a private equity fund. It's that there is some great returns, right? And those investment vehicles are today, they're not available to, you know, John Q Public, Jane Q Public, right? You have to be a, what's called an accredited investor,
right?
Which means you have to be like sort of really sophisticated about the markets. But the second part of it is you have to have a lot of money, right? There's a threshold. It's $1 million of investable assets. Like, think about this just in the U.S. How many people have $1 million of investable assets,
sure,
not their home, right? There's not a lot of people out there.
No.
And so it's for the elite, right? So how do you, but there should be those opportunities. So how do you actually connect those dots? One is obviously you make the plumbing part of it, where opening accounts and do the funding, all the things that we did kind of V1 of Apex. But you're hitting on something, which is where this is going is, how do you get those investment products, right? So let's just talk about, it's called alts, mm-hmm. right? Alternative investments, and democratize that. How do you make it such that, somebody that has $1,000 in their account can invest in the equivalent of a hedge fund or mm-hmm. real estate, right? Or in, a vintage car. Mm-hmm. Those things are coming, one, because you can create the connections with folks like Apex. Two is, is this notion of blockchain, which is you can take those assets now and digitize them and then fractionalize them, mm-hmm. right? So you think about rare wines, you think about real estate, you think about things like vintage cars, gold. You can take them, you can put them on chain, you can fractionalize it, and then offer it to customers. So that's part one of it. The second part is you can do things, there's a term in the industry called direct indexing, which allows for firms like Apex to offer to retail investors the ability to invest in those type of assets alongside of equities in a portfolio that's not managed by BlackRock or Vanguard, mm-hmm. but it's actually a collection of individual assets that you kind of package together into a portfolio, fractionalize it, and offer it out to a retail investor.
Wow. And that would be an Apex product. That's very compelling. It's almost like a ETF on the fly in some ways. Yeah.
I mean, look, what's been fun for us is that platform, and I think you use Stripe as a good example. We have partners. We're working with different folks. It's really been fun here at Money 2020 because there's a lot of really smart people, mm-hmm. really amazing entrepreneurs that are doing creative things that are natural partners or potential acquirees of Apex as this platform. Mm-hmm. And so we have the scale. We have 250 clients. We support 25 million retail investors. And we built the platform. And the ability for these different aspects or assets or features to be plugged into the platforms is pretty simple for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you talked about alts, right? And I think you recently announced a fixed income product.
Yeah.
Why is that important? Is that kind of the interest rate environment? And tell our audience as to what they can do with that product.
Sure. Yeah. So we launched product over the last couple of weeks, fractional fixed income. And the reason it's relevant today is, let's just talk about the macro environment, right? So the Fed keeps raising rates. Mm-hmm. Yields are, the 10 years up, way up. It's over 5%. No one cared about fixed income because, the Fed was at zero or close to zero. And so the yield for a retail investor on a product, a fixed income product, whether it was a corporate bond, a muni bond, a government bond, a CD, was pretty low, right? Now with the Fed continuing to raise rates and then hold them up, there is now interest, right, rightfully so, in an alternative to equities, right? Equities, right, the markets are very volatile, like we talked before. Now you have a product that provides a fixed income. Mm-hmm. Right, there is a guaranteed rate of return against the instrument. The challenge has been, right, if you think about yourself, I mean, how many times have you ever bought a corporate bond in your life?
Not much.
Yeah. It's hard to do. Yeah. And you have to have a lot of money, right? So the minimum size for some corporate bonds is $10,000 or higher. And the access to know what to do has been really difficult. So what we did is we built smart routers that allow us to aggregate different pools of fixed income liquidity and then fractionalized it, right? And similar to what we did on the equities side, we pioneered fractional shares. My expectation is people will follow us again as mm-hmm. Apex, mm-hmm. and this notion of fractional fixed income will be just the norm.
Yeah,
and it'll allow people, retail investors that have $100 to buy a corporate bond in Tesla that's generating 7-8% yield.
I did recently, I did buy treasuries for the first time in the last year, things have been up. But I totally see the point.
But it was hard to do, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is not easy. Yeah. And it's not very evident where to go or what to buy, even with a broker or others. So, no, very true. And I think one of the values I see in what you're saying, right, you're able to respond to the market condition, offer new products to your clients.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the power of why they should work with you, because some of the your incumbent or the bigger players, they don't respond. They're not so agile, so to speak, for market. And it doesn't matter to them so much as well, right? Because they have institutional customers. So,
but you still have to do things right. You know, correct. It is, yeah. Again, compare, contrast, like a Stripe. Investing is complicated, mm-hmm. right? So you have the SEC, you have FINRA, you have CFTC, you have a bunch of regulators. There are numerous rules that have to be abided by. And us as the custodian, we take that job pretty seriously, right? So you can be a really cool kind of, break glass fintech company and do cool things, but you better dot I's and cross T's and make sure that you're doing it right, because you're actually holding, we talked about $115 billion in assets. Mm-hmm. Those are all people's money, mm-hmm. just like you and me, right? And so you have to make sure you get that right. Mm-hmm. And we were talking before we started about SVB. Mm-hmm. You can see just, different industry, but you can see what can go wrong if you don't understand how to custody assets well.
That's right.
And so, you kind of marry the two, where it's like we are amazing at following the rules, dotting I's, crossing T's, and we're great at technology. That is the superpower of Apex.
It's indeed. Yeah. And I want to kind of switch gears and talk about some more future. And you referenced chain and blockchain and the T+2, right? It fits mm-hmm. in there. Blockchain can fit in fractional as well as the streamlining yep. kind of settlement. And I want to talk about AI. So I'm going to give you the choice. Which should we go first? AI around kind of, obviously, there's a little buzz around AI, Gen AI, and, mm-hmm. and how it applies to advising or wealth management, kind of the ultimate robo advisor, autonomous investing, to borrow things from Mr. Musk's autonomous driving or the industry autonomous driving, so we can have autonomous wealth management. So which should we tackle first?
Well let's do that one. Right? Let's go into the autonomous wealth.
Okay. Yeah. So where do you see? So I have this kind of thesis that, at least in Money 20, I kind of posted on LinkedIn about this, that at least day one, I don't know whether you were here on Sunday, but it was a lot. NVIDIA was here. NVIDIA, what's it doing in a fintech conference?
Yeah.
They make chips or GPUs, or they call it X-ray computing. They're big. They're sponsoring quite a bit. So obviously everyone's interested in AI and Gen AI and what it can do, and financial services is a test bed. So everyone's Google, NVIDIA. Everybody's talking about use cases, wealth management, managing. So it's not just going to drive our cars. It's going to manage our money autonomously, so to speak, eventually, right? So that's and I kind of say that fintech, because of the slowdown, interest rate conditions, almost becoming fintel or fin and AI.
Yeah.
That's the big growth area. So how do you see it? Meaning, how is it going to impact? Is it more around that autonomous kind of capability, or is it more kind of at the back and creating efficiency? Is it some of both?
Yeah, I was going to say my answer is yes. And the reason for it is there's the bottoms up and there's the top down to the answer, right? Uh-huh. So let's take the top down piece first. You think about the world we live in today, and we talked about traditional advisory. There's literally 25,000 advisors in the United States today. Mm-hmm. And there's a massive portion of their job is to create these portfolios for retail investors, for those wealth investors that they have. A lot of that job should be automated. It doesn't mean that the 25,000 investors are going to be out of a job. I don't want to necessarily say mm-hmm. that. But what it should do is it should take a lot of the nonsense out of what they do day in and day out. It should automate a whole bunch of that stuff. It should create smarter decisions based upon what the needs of and the desires of the end customer are, and allow for that advisor to actually create more value with that relationship with the end investor. Mm-hmm. So that top-down piece, I can see where one is they have better scale. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I talk about this all the time. Most advisors have a minimum size account of $500,000. So if you can't write a check for that advisor for $500,000 and hand them a check, they don't want you as a client, right? And the reason for that is because there's so much inefficiency in the way that an advisor's world works, right? So partly tied to, we talked about the incumbent custodians. But this notion of using AI to eliminate the friction on the front office side, number one. And number two is, so you give somebody that $500,000 as the minimum, and you pay 1%, right? And so if you looked at your, we talked before, you said you have an advisor. If you looked at your payroll, your personal payroll, that advisor's probably at the top of the stack. That's in right. terms of who you pay every year, right? And when you think about the return on that investment, it's just okay, mm-hmm. right? 1%. It's a massive amount of money. And so I think that AI is going to help become more efficient, and I think it's also going to help drive costs down mm-hmm. for the retail investor. That's on the sort of top-end side. I think on the back-end side, you know, stuff around Apex is a good example. Is there's still a lot. I mean, I'm proud of the fact that we have 25 retail investors. We process hundreds of millions of trades every year. But I still have 800 people at Apex that are predominantly either coding or handling exceptions. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just take a really good example. Sadly, there's a lot of fraud, right? We're here at Money 2020, walk around the conference.
A lot of fraud talk,
there are a
yeah.
lot of fraud companies. There's a lot of fraud in you know, the world of investing. Mm-hmm. AI should and can help us as operators eliminate or at least significantly reduce fraud mm-hmm. by seeing patterns that I could not possibly do, mm-hmm. right? And so I think we'll see more of that stuff, which, again, will in turn create a better experience for a retail investor.
Yeah. So on your first point, I'm almost thinking it's a new Apex product, a advisor co-pilot, AI-based. Is that how it works?
Got to be careful what I say, but yeah, yes. So the answer is, it's funny, today is a good example. We have some partners, we have some clients that started their business as B2C, mm-hmm. but are realizing that they're probably better as a B2B2C company mm-hmm. and partnering with Apex, right, might be a smart idea for them. And so some of them are creating some of those AI bots, direct index products, mm-hmm. allowing for advisors to become more efficient. Apex partnering with them, offering them as part of the platform. Just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Interesting you say that, because one of the pieces I put out around AI is this thing called, I call it AI-berization. Kind of, it's a long tongue-twisting word, but it's kind of catch on Uberization, kind of disruption. So AI-berization, I define it as kind of the knowledge work economy disruption, where
yep.
you have less skilled, underskilled folks being able to do programming, design.
Yep.
That's where we're seeing. But can go into advisor.
Yep.
So companies, like you're saying, tech companies, they can use lower skilled folks to do what kind of, which would require
yep.
license or higher skills. No, so it's coming. And,
yeah.
and I think that we're probably going to see it pretty soon. What do you think? We're
yeah,
ready
I mean,
for it?
Well, look, I think traditional advisory, traditional wealth management, traditional Wall Street, I think is behind for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can just let me speak to what Apex is doing. So we hired a team of AI experts, right, really to provide the framework, number one, and the guardrails around how to, you know, work within a generative AI framework, right, large language models. And then the second part is, and I say it all the time in my team, is if my team thinks that I'm going to walk around and sprinkle AI pixie dust over the firm and magically things are going to happen around AI, that's not the way this is going to work.
Right.
What it is that there are teams, right, within Apex, and I'll pick on the ACAT team. Right? There's a team that develops product around this thing called an ACAT, which is an automatic transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They know more about ACATs than I'll ever know, right? They know more about ACATS than the generative AI team that we built to create the framework. Mm-hmm. Their job is to lean in, understand the tools that are available, and use those tools to create sort of amazing experiences within ACATS, mm-hmm. right? And so the push for us is a bottoms up, where it's incumbent upon all the development teams and all the product managers to make this part of their daily sort of fabric, the fabric of the firm. I think the challenge in our business, and the reason, you know, historically we kind of trail some of the more kind of cutting edge technology industries, is because the incumbents, the big banks, right, they take a very measured, very slow, very methodical approach versus the bottoms up that I just talked about. So mm-hmm. we'll see. You know, I think you're going to have firms like Apex that are going to take the lead.
Yeah.
And like we've seen, you know, we've done before, fractional shares, zero commission, fractional fixed income. There'll be fast follows watching what Apex is doing.
Yeah. No, you. It reminds me of you almost embrace Steve Jobs, who I admire and like, and I think a lot of people like, philosophy. I think he was asked, I might be kind of paraphrasing, as to, does Apple have an innovation group like others do? He says, no, every group is an innovation. They have to innovate themselves. Yeah. So I think you embrace that philosophy. Yeah. That's kind of how you kind of explain how you're seeing it.
First person to ever make the analogy between me and Steve Jobs. So.
No, so I'm
going to tell my wife that.
I'm going to be tracking Apex and how you guys do. We could go on, Bill, and it's been fascinating, but I think we have other things to do. You have a meeting to go to. So one thing I'd like to ask, and I was kind of researching your profile, you talk about following advice from Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism. At a time when many of us commit reflexively to doing more, and I'm guilty of that too, taking more meetings, mentoring more people, sitting on more boards, etc. This book celebrates the disciplined pursuit of less, and that's within quotes. Yeah. So instead of pursuing everything, it teaches pursue the right things. So you seem to have figured it out. How do you do that? And what advice do you have for folks who struggle with it?
Yeah, look, I wouldn't tell you I haven't figured out. I will tell you I'm pretty self-aware, though, mm-hmm. right? I know that you know, when I'm trying to do too much, right, you know, this notion of spreading peanut butter really thin, mm-hmm. I get less impactful things accomplished. And so I don't want to say it's a daily struggle, but I've read that book several times, Essentialism, which I think is a good read for the audience, about doing fewer things, but doing them really good, mm-hmm. really well. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of plays into Apex, which is there's no shortage of things to do. And by the way, there's 50 opportunities for us to make money, right? And they all make money. I'm certain of it. But some will make more money than others. Some will, you know, sort of disrupt the world more than others. And the trick and the challenge is focusing on those things that have the greatest yield, the greatest return on investment, right? And investment doesn't necessarily mean money. It can be time. It can be, you know, a lot of different things.
True.
And so for me as a leader of Apex, as me as an individual, I really do try and make sure that we're focused on the right things, that I am focused on the right things, that my time is valuable, right? And that the yield is worth, right, the sort of impact or the input. I will tell you, I'm not perfect at it, but I think we're pretty good as an organization to do fewer things but do them really well.
Yeah, no, that's great, and it's a journey. Yeah, it's not so much of a destination. No, that's great, and a lot of my listeners are kind of startups and kind of focusing on AI and Gen AI. I know you talked about you're building your own team and empowering them to kind of try AI, but if you want to talk about a couple of things, how do people kind of follow you?
Sure.
Which social media, if you want to give that kind of stuff out, and what kind of partners are you looking for, especially on AI or other things?
Yeah.
Who should kind of
get
in touch?
I mean, look, Best way to get in touch with me, social media is LinkedIn. William Capuzzi, the last name is C-A-P-U-Z-Z-I. And what I'd say to the audience is, you know, like I said, we're a platform. We're really a pretty broad platform focused on investing. And so there's lots of potential partners. There's lots of potential companies out there. There's a lot of potential individuals that may have, we may have spots for them, as from an employment standpoint, and or doing things that could be an additive in terms of the broader platform. So I'd encourage folks to reach out to me directly, and to the extent that there's some, you know, connection within the firm, I'll make, you know, the right introductions.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Bill, for being on the FinTech Talk Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay.
All right.